Hoi there, Ome, and welcome back to the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast, a Shadowrun 4th Edition Actual Play Podcast. Janderon over here, and take a listen to Episode 2 of Season 2, in which we catch up with Deandra and Cecile as they spend some relaxing downtime doing nothing. Uh-huh, sure. Can you picture either of those two just doing nothing and relaxing? Nope. Deandra does some light shopping and casual kidnapping. Cecile makes a bargain with the devil, Prokop Skillful, snoops on her friend Kirsten, and then pries into Deandra's past. Ah, downtime. As always, featuring Veronica as Cecile, a.k.a. College Girl, and Kat as Deandra. It's really whiz that you are joining us, and I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, please tell your friends and leave us a positive review. We are available on most podcast services, YouTube, iTunes, etc. You can also find a link to our Discord server in the podcast description and on the YouTube channel. We would love to hear from you, and we share a lot of in-game pay data there as well, such as maps, intros, fluff, and character stories. On other topics, the secretive guild of Shadowrun podcast and content creators that I may or may not be part of invites you cordially to check out the great pay data that is being created for you on the Matrix. Today I want to tell you about a collaboration between two of my favorite Shadowrun podcasters, Mr. Johnson of the Arcology podcast and Opti of the Neo-Anarchist podcast, as well as several other great cast members. The show is called Shadowrun Origins. Our intrepid cast plays their way through the published adventures of the golden era of the game. It's brilliant, and a fun listen, with great characters and plenty of nostalgia. Thank you again, chummers. Don't forget, watch your back, conserve your ammo. When in doubt, shoot it out, and never, ever make a deal with a dragon. All right, so you want to talk to Buzz and you want to check in on the on your fan club.
I think Deandra, it's not like a check-in for her. It's more like she's convinced these kids are going to get into some trouble if she doesn't go and talk to them.
Are you going to stay in touch with the rest of the team, or are you basically just going off and doing your own thing?
I think Deandra, at this point, she wouldn't tell them what she's doing, but she would stay. If someone else sent her a message, then she would respond to it.
Okay. All right. So first thing that happens is you get another call back. Let's say it's a day after you've delivered Ice and rigor mortis to Prokop, and basically Ice and rigor mortis have said their goodbyes, and as far as you know, they're being spirited out of Seattle and heading to Nova Scotia, where Ice had been living. So it's the next day, and I'm sure you're following your usual routine in the morning, coffee and a cigarette, right?
Well, Deandra doesn't smoke, or she stopped smoking before the campaign started. She just has a soy cap and stares at the wall for several, but then she kind of continues on.
So at some point during the day, you get a call from Brown Dog again. It's a voice call, so not texting right now.
I think Deandra had like a chat with Brown Dog when they first kind of got into business together, that if it was important, he should call her, because ain't no way she's going to respond to a text if it's important. But yeah, she picks up immediately if it's Brown Dog, like before the first ring.
Yes. Hi, Deandra.
How have you been, Brown Dog?
Good, good. Listen, set up that meeting like I told you I would do, trying to show initiative.
Thank you.
Next time you're talking to the big guy, let him know that I'm out there and I'm looking for, contacts and I'm reliable, all right?
Yep.
So I got this chummer of mine, Buzz. Well, he's not really a chummer. I don't know why I said that. He's done some jobs. He's done some work for me. Solid character. Anyways. So what I was getting at is he had sort of heard about the fact that Prokop had put some word out there that, he was potentially looking for somebody. And anyway, this guy, Buzz, he came back to me and sort of asked me what it was about. And I told him that I could get him in touch with you. So anyways, I set the meeting up.
Thank you.
There's a little place, down in Tacoma area. It's like a dockyard worker kind of place. Apparently Buzz hangs out there quite a bit. He said he'd like to meet you there tonight, sometime around 8 p.m.
I'll be there.
All right, Wiz. Let me know how it goes.
I will.
Thank you. He signs off.
Again, Brondog. I think Deandre would go back to moving around her notes on her pin boards. If the deal has moved out yet, she wouldn't leave her conspiracy theory pin boards uncovered if there was no seal. Or if there was a seal. Actually, I did find a few things that I wanted to purchase, but they're all incredibly...
All right, so maybe you spend the rest of the day just sort of going around getting this, buying your mundane stuff that you're looking for.
Oh, well, most of the stuff I picked isn't not mundane.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say it. You know, it's all pretty easy to get.
I wanted to get a high rating Maglock pass key or Maglock pass key, and maybe a Maglock sequencer, and some cellular glove molders.
Cellular glove molders.
Mm-hmm. It's like a fingerprint scanner that makes a. I guess a way to get people's fingerprints.
Do you have a contact that you could call for that?
I got Zeke to handle the last thing that I purchased illegally from, and I think I have his contact.
Zeke was the guy you met out behind the stuffer shack with ice the other day, couple of nights ago.
Zeke was the guy I purchased the
key card skimmer from.
Yeah, the key card skimmer and thermal dampening my suit from. So he's been my illegal items person. He was a dwarf, I think.
I think he was a dwarf when he came. He rolled in with two like worker troll bodyguards. Yeah. All right. So you're going to give Zeke a call and give him a shopping list, or are you going to text him?
I think Deandre would text him because she has spoken to Zeke phone calls and hasn't been on a phone call with Zeke yet. So just a text. Have a few items that I need to get. I'm wondering if you're good for them. Or like a, hey, this is Deandre, we did business one time.
So he's loyalty 1, connection 3.
Yep. Looking to purchase some more instruments.
All right, so you shoot him a text, and then you go about your day. You don't immediately get a message back from him. A couple of hours later, probably sort of mid-afternoon, 2, 3 p.m., you get a text back from Zeke. Just a couple of words, basically, text me a good time to meet.
I think Deandre would probably give him before her meeting with Buzz, like a good hour or two before it.
All right, so that meeting's at 8, so you want to meet Zeke at 6?
Probably, yeah.
All right, a thumbs up emoji comes back, and then a location. It's a different stuffer shack. It's in Auburn. So, actually, no, you know what? It's a taco temple.
I think the Endeavor would probably put up with going to a taco temple, but I don't think she'd eat anything there. That doesn't sound like her kind of place.
How does the Endeavor feel about, well, she probably, you can't really get away from it. Taco temple, I think, is an Aztlan brand.
I think only like small branch companies of the corporate get into Kharosir, because haven't all the Big Ten been kicked out of Kharosir?
Yes.
Yeah. So very few things does Deandre like in like corporate foods, I guess.
Okay, so you head out to off to Auburn. Where's your safe house? Is in Auburn, isn't it?
My home is in Auburn. It's not a safe house. That's why we like never return there after a job.
Yeah, so you're in Auburn. You know the neighborhood fairly well. You also know that this is, I mean, I think you've been to Boxer's place here in Auburn. You know that Boxer lives in Auburn as well. And you head out to the Taco Temple and pull into the back behind the Taco Temple where the dumpsters are and, you know, the loading dock and devil rats hang out at night kind of place, because you know that's where Zeke usually likes to do his business.
Alleys.
Every time you've met him so far, it's always been behind either a stuffer shack or a taco temple or some other similar establishment. Never the same place twice, though. You gotta hand it to him, at least on that count. I imagine you get there quite punctually.
Yep.
A few minutes later, you see Zeke's big black van sort of circle the parking lot once and then drive in behind and stops, and the van door slides open, and one of the orc bodyguard gets out, looks around, and then Zeke hops out, bodyguard gets out. Zeke saunters over to you, sort of the, you know, the little big guy kind of strut. I don't remember if we described him last time, but I sort of picture Zeke as, you know, big, bushy, red beard, red hair, probably wearing some kind of glasses or goggles. He's wearing black leathers. He rolls up to you and says, "Hey, chummer, it's been a while. Well, 2 or 3 days at least. We keep meeting like this, people are going to talk."
Hopefully this should be my last gear pickup for a while. Maybe not. I don't know how hopeful you are of that.
Hopefully not. I like doing business with you. So what can I get you?
First of all, what I imagine is the hardest. Pull a little cigarette case in my inner jacket pocket. And there are four what look to be incredibly fancy cigarettes from like an elven. They're like elven make. They're a company, Shearshamgeier Company. And I pull one out and close the case and I hand it over to them. These are infused with very particular elvish drug. Like to acquire more of them. They're not for me, but for possible use.
He looks at it for a second. He looks at you quizzically and he says, "Lace?"
"The one and only."
"Wow. All right. Well, could be a little challenging. I don't generally deal in this type of stuff."
"These aren't for recreational use, so I doubt any. I highly doubt that any normal dealers would carry them or even stock them, I guess." And she kind of puts it back. "They were specially made for Kerasir detectives, so we could gather information and people forget about us. Pack will probably be expensive, but it's all I'll ever need, to be honest."
"Now, I can ask around and see if I can get you the lace. Do you need them in this form, in this cigarette form?"
"Yes, I'm not looking for raw lace."
"Okay, so that's going to be a little bit more challenging. Probably going to need to give me a couple of days on this one."
"I have a few other things, but you can take as much time as you need." She pulls out a list, and on the list it says a Magilock passkey and sequencer, probably a face kit, which is another spy games tool.
And he looks the list up and down and says, "Yep, well, this is more my speed. You know, I like to deal in hardware more than consumables."
"It's not really meant to be consumed."
"Yeah, it's just not sort of my specialty, that kind of thing, especially when you want it specifically in the cigarettes. But, you know, that's not to say I can't find the right person and get it for you."
"I figured that more people would run in your circles that possibility of having if I went to a common street rat or if I..."
"Well, if you're not in a rush, I mean, you're probably better off, you know, going down to, going down south, finding it there, but I can definitely look for it if you're not in a rush."
"Not in a rush. Not really in the game of leaving Seattle at the moment. But otherwise, that's it."
"Well, this, the Magilock passkey and sequencer and this face kit, I can get that for you within a couple of hours. So I'll let you know when I've got that, and then in a day or two, I'll call you. I'll get back in touch with you, and I'll either let you know that I can get you the, these cigarettes or that I can't."
"Thank you."
"If I can't, I would recommend potentially going down to..." He says, "Yeah, you. If you need it in a hurry, though, you could probably just go down to Terraslar and find some people there who probably are. It's easier to come by down there."
"Thank you. Though I'd like to think that the item is less likely to end up on the street than I'd want, I guess."
"Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I know what it's for, and I know people who've used it, but it's not really a common thing to find."
"Definitely. I thought that I'd bring my business to you first, since you've done me a favor."
"No, I appreciate that. Like I said, I'll be in touch within the next couple of hours on some of this more generic stuff here, but it'll probably take me a day or two on these cigarettes."
"Thank you."
All right. He gets into the van. Actually, I think one of the orcs has pulled out like a little step stool, so he can basically like a little pair of steps for him to climb up into the side door, and then, you know, bodyguard grabs that stool and climbs in behind him and closes the door, and the van takes off. And you've got about, you talked for about a half an hour. You've got about an hour and a half before you need to meet, are supposed to meet Buzz down in Tacoma.
For the purpose of my notes, How do you think Zeke Jaeger would take coffee or soy calf?
Zeke Jaeger probably takes it black and unsweetened. He's sort of a no-nonsense, straight shooter type.
And I guess, I think Dinder would head early to Tacoma to meet Buzz.
All right, you're meeting Buzz at a place called The Clearys on 15th Avenue.
I think she'd end up kind of not scoping the area, but like casing the place quickly.
It's a sort of a local working class neighborhood bar. It looks like it's pretty full. You can see people standing around outside and drinking and smoking. And it's obviously where a lot of the dock workers come after a shift. It's also not too far away from both Samovar and Olga's tea kitchen.
I think Deandre would just park her bike and walk in.
Yeah, it's crowded. It's got a fairly good vibe to it. You know, it's not the kind of place you walk into and it, you know, goes silent and everybody looks at you. There's a lot of talking and joking, and you've got grid screens showing the latest, you know, combat biker matches and stuff like that. You know, people playing darts and yep. So yeah, it's pretty crowded. You're gonna sidle up to the bar, or?
I think Dean Dare would end up at the bar after like standing around. She probably would walk. This is an odd thing that if anyone else was looking, she'd walk around the outside of the place before she went up to the bar to get something.
All right, make a perception check, and you can add your law enforcement skill dice to it.
Got one for law enforcement dice. So perception plus one, two.
Like I said, it's a very working class kind of bar. There, the mix of patrons is pretty even, male, female, and the various meta types. So obviously there's no discrimination that goes on in this bar. If you're a dockhand, you're welcome here, it looks like. You do pick up on a couple of tattoos and other things that hint that there may be some kind of criminal element that frequents the bar, although you can't necessarily place it. It's although you can definitively say it's not Yak. There's no Yakuza stuff, but you know, maybe it's the mob, maybe it's something else. You pull up to the bar, it's pretty crowded, so you sort of have to wedge yourself in there. The barkeep heads over. She's an orc with a giant flaming mane of red hair and some really interesting sort of tribal tattoos down her arms. And she's got a Colt Manhunter stuffed into her belt. And she comes up, catches your eye, and then says, "What you having?"
Give me a glass of whatever's on tap. How about that?
Done. She fairly smoothly and expertly fills a glass, plops it down in front of you, and heads off to grab the next customer. And after a few more minutes, she comes back to you and she says, "Haven't seen you around here before."
I was invited, you could say, by a friend of mine.
Looking for somebody?
I have a meeting with somebody.
Somebody have a name? Maybe I know them.
Goes by Buzz, certain circles.
Okay, yeah, I know Buzz. He's a regular.
We have a mutual friend in Brown Dog.
I don't know any Brown Dog, but I do know Buzz. So when he comes in, and I'm sure he will, I'll let you know.
Thank you.
And a little while later, she comes back to you, and she sort of puts two fingers up to her temple, and then she sort of points into a corner where you see a guy settling down into a booth. There's three guys, but you can tell who's Buzz just by his haircut. It's a very short cropped military type flat top. His hair is it's blonde, human male, wearing some, you know, standard run of the mill street clothes. Two people with him are both elves. I guess make another perception test.
Yeah, Judge Intendant's way better. Four.
Something about this doesn't seem right. He, the two elves that are with him and him, it's a mismatch. So they, while they don't look, you know, they're not looking around shifty or anything like that, they're dressed just as casually as he is and looking around just as casually as he is. Something about the flavor of this doesn't seem right to you.
I think I'd end up calling the bartender over. Dinder would write like a, pull out her notebook with a piece of flimsy, write out like a quick note and her comm number on it, I guess, and like fold it up and stick it in a napkin, or like, yeah, that's probably a way that she deliver it. And then she calls over the bartender and asks, "You ever seen those two with Buzz before?"
The orc takes a look over and looks back at you and sort of gives a small shake of her head, as you know, sort of a negative shake. Pretty imperceptible. She's obviously playing it. She's playing along with it.
Do me a favor. Send Buzz a round of whatever he knows and make sure he reads this and hands over the note. I'll pay for it.
Of course. She goes over and she pulls a bottle of scotch off of the one of the shelves and fills up a decent shot into a tumbler and gives you sort of a wink and heads over there. And she walks up and she says, "Ah, Buzz, your usual, I guess." And she sets the drink down in front of him with the napkin under it, sort of folded. And you see him look at her and then down, and the elves. And then she looks at the elves as they're, you can see the elves are just sort of starting to pay attention. And then to distract them again, she basically asks them, "Hey, what are you guys having?" And they ask for, they both order a beer. And she comes back and gives you another wink and as she fills their drinks.
Can I see if there is a Spirithil accent in either of the elves speaking, I guess? Although that's probably not very noticeable, or pretty minor, I guess.
You wanna see if you can tell whether they're speaking in Spirithil?
No, if like their native Spirithil speak have somewhat of an accent, right? So
probably pretty hard to judge from where you're at. And they don't seem to be talking a whole lot right now. They're just sitting next to Buzz, and he's sitting there sipping a scotch. And then as he's sipping a scotch, you see him, you know, palm the napkin and put it in his pocket.
Dinder, then, I think Dinder would attempt a disguise check to make herself look much drunker than she is.
Okay.
That's what I'd like to do. So, guys, zero. I am going to edge this. So, post-edging, I re-roll the whole thing. I'm just, disguise. Three. Much better.
Okay.
She'd kind of slowly, over a few minutes, she wouldn't, like, pull apart her outfit, but kind of what it looks like, she'd make herself look significantly more, posed, I guess.
So, I guess since you've got the bad luck attribute, don't you need to roll?
Oh, yeah. I gotta roll a d6. Thank you. I roll a 3, so nothing happens. That bad luck has gone off once.
And you've got distinctive style, so you're basically trying to hide that distinctive style?
No, Dinder is trying to add to her next con check. Goes up and incredibly drunk to the people, to Buzz and the people hanging around Buzz.
They watch you approaching, sort of weaving through the crowd and bumping into people, and, you know, you roll up to the table and Buzz looks up at you and says, "Can I help you?"
I think D&D would, in the like attempt to sound incredibly, wouldn't say anything, trying to gather her words, and then in Spirithial, with no attempt made to make Buzz understand any scent of it, she would say like, "So, how are you two doing tonight?"
That gets their attention. They look at each other and then they look at you, and one of them answers back, also in Spirithial, "Well, detective, looks like you've fallen on hard times."
She hears that and immediately just snaps out of the, sits down directly, like from acting drunk to just straight up being completely sober. Not necessarily, simply was making sure nothing happened specifically.
That elicits sort of a grin from him, and he pats Buzz on the shoulder and says, "You can get out of here, Buzz. We're gonna have a chat with our friend Dinder. Appreciate you doing your part." You see him slide a cred stick over to Buzz, who quickly palms it and heads back out of the bar. He looks at you, "So, I'm not going to introduce myself because we are trying to, well, you don't need to know who we are or who we represent at this point, but word on the out in the shadows is that you're making inquiries regarding your brother."
"Who'd like to know?"
"Well, it wasn't really a question. I guess it was more of a statement. We've been asked to ask you to put an end to these inquiries."
"Why?"
He just gives you a shrug, and you know how it is.
"No, Can we act, let's act for a second like we don't know how I, like I don't know how. So you're going to tell me why I should stop?
Well, for one thing, I don't know. I've just been told to tell you to stop asking.
I think Diandir has become visibly annoyed at this point.
And you should know how that is. When your superiors ask you to do something, you do it.
Do you understand nothing?
I understand what I need to understand.
Spoken like a true cog.
Well, the world might be better off if we all knew our places, wouldn't it?
Maybe places aren't meant for some people.
Indeed. So, the message is delivered. I haven't been asked to take back any kind of confirmation, but I would recommend following this request.
If you ever see the error of your way, I'll be happy to teach you how to live your own life. And Diandir spits on the table and stands up and walks out.
The two elves watch you walk out without any further move on your part. As you're leaving, you see Buzz sort of... He's standing in an alleyway across from the bar. As soon as you come out, he sort of ducks back into the shadows. But you're pretty sure he meant you to see him.
Diandir jumps on her bike and basically does like a lap of the block that he's hiding in the alley then.
Okay. Are you looking for anything in particular, or are you just sort of scoping the area out, making sure that...
Oh, no, not a lap. She's going to the other side just so her bike still see. And then she's going to enter and try to find Buzz in the alleys, I guess.
Okay. Are you doing any kind of sneaking? Are you sneak up on him, or are you just going to go walk right on him?
I'm just going to walk right on him.
All right. You walk in, and you find the alleyway, and you see Buzz. He's standing a little bit further back in the alleyway, and he's still looking at the bar as if he's expecting you to show back up or something. So you're now behind him.
Diandir would walk directly up to him, wheel him around, and she'd drag him deeper into the alleyway, probably try to get him back to her bike.
All right. As you grab him, he yelps and says, "Hey, what's going on?"
I think in English, or in whatever Seattle pigeon speak, Diandir thinks he would understand. She'd go, "Shut up.
Don't hurt me. I didn't mean anything by it. Those two they found me. They made me get you in here. I mean, I had to talk to you anyways, but I don't know how those two found me."
She drag him to the motorcycle, and when they get to the motorcycle, she point to the side, "Sit."
He sits down in it, and he's like, he's got his hands up, and you can see he's a little bit, he's actually quite frightened.
"Okay, idiot. I'm not going to kill you, okay? That would be, poor taste. But I'm going to kidnap you. So sit tight and put a helmet on."
He says, "Come on, I didn't have any choice. You saw those two. There's no way I could stand up to them. Where are you taking me?"
"To a hotel."
All right. He's still looking scared as he grabs the helmet and puts it on and says, "God damn it. How do I always get myself into this mess? Where does this direct come from?"
I think Diandir is seething at this point. Like, if her glamour ever picks up on action more than just her hair has probably shifted to the spectrum, and is like, she's flying through the streets. Not in like a I'm being reckless way, it's like an I'm mad. I guess that is reckless, but to like a close coffin hotel, or a closer one, I guess. If she knows one.
Alright, make a pilot groundcraft test.
We love those. Two.
Alright, so you tear through the night, letting sort of the emotions of this anger and this frustration pour into your driving. Out of the corner of your eyes, you see Buzz hanging on for dear life. His face has gone pale. You pull into a coffin motel that you see in the area. Interestingly enough, it's called the Lakewood Comfy Cubicle, which something about that name reminds you of something, but you can't quite put your finger on it. But it's, you know, it looks like a clean, brightly lit place, typical cubicle.
I think once she's done road raging, she's going to calmly get off the bike and like offer a hand in like the most shitty way possible to someone she's just scared out of their goddamn life on a bike.
He takes your hand and gets up and takes the helmet off and gets out of the car and is like, "All right, so What's the play here? You said you weren't going to hurt me, right?
I'm not going to. And then she turns around and walks in like a, and gives like a follow me motion.
He looks around furtively and then follows after you.
Deandre, in the quickest way possible, grabs a hotel room, walks up with Buzz up to the hotel room. And the second she gets in, she has the hotel room door locked, she's going to turn on her white noise jammer and drop it by the door. She's going to tear apart the sheets on the bed and then sit down in whatever bowl or chair they and in a very calm way say, tell me what you know.
You're looking for your brother, right?
Guillen Calve.
Yeah, so he used to work for MTC, right?
That's true.
Okay, so, Brown Dog said that there'd probably be some Nuyen in it for me?
There is.
All right.
And a bonus with a certain stipulation.
Okay, what's the stipulation?
She opens the cigarette case and pulls out a Lay's cigarette. This cigarette is laced with a very specific drug. You might know it as Lay's.
His eyes go wide.
The strain of this drug will simply make you forget. Now, i.e. it erases your memory in a way that is mostly unrecoverable. I'll give you 1,000 Nuyen for the information and 2,500. Forget that you've ever met.
He looks surprised, his eyes wide. Yeah, for 2,500 Nuyen, I'll forget I ever knew you for sure.
I'm not talking about you simply not speaking to anyone else. I'm talking about you. She motions towards the cigarette, which she's smoking, and deleting me from your mind.
He looks a little bit anxious and nervous again. He says, but you can also tell that he's tempted. You can see sort of the conflict in him as he's trying to decide, you know, whether the risk is worth the reward. And finally, you see greed win, and he nods his head and says, yeah, all right, I'll do it. What the heck? 2,500 Nuyen, 2,500 Nuyen.
What do you know?
Well, okay, so... It's been a couple of years now, but a couple of years ago, I was doing this job before I knew Brown Dog, right? Anyways, that name, Rian, well, I think one of the guys on the run, I think he was one of the guys on the run.
You think or you know?
Well, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it, you know, they just, he was running with a different team back then. I'm pretty sure they were MTC. If I remember right, they were sort of a black ops squad. Anyways, they hired me and one of my mates there to basically create a distraction for them. Yeah, they were a Mitsuhama team, and he sort of matches the physical description that's out there that you were looking for. So there was, I don't think I was introduced to him, but he was a mage. But I think I can remember. Betcha I can remember the his team leader's name. Yeah, what was his name? Started with a K. I think they called him Lieutenant Klein, maybe? Maybe his name was Klein? Sort of a weird name. But yeah, that's what I had. That's what I was going to tell you.
Do you know who is, do you know the name of the other person you ran with this?
You mean my chummer?
Yes, your chummer.
Yeah, he bought it a while ago already. As a matter of fact, I sort of was a little bit suspicious after Fred bought it, and that's when I came down here to Tacoma and sort of changed it up a bit. Because, I'm not saying that your brother or his team did Fred in or were going to do me in, but it just didn't seem healthy hanging about knowing what I knew about them.
That's probably smart.
Yeah, I was actually, when those two picked me up earlier today and made me tell them what I knew about you, I was a little worried that they were from MCT, but I don't think they were, actually.
Lieutenant Klein was the guy's name?
Lieutenant Klein. I'm pretty sure it was Lieutenant Klein. He said it funny, though. It's, like I said, it's been a couple years now, and I only met them the one time. Real scary guys, though. That whole team was a little bit, definitely made me and my, me and Fred were definitely, not feeling all that, yeah. They were scary. Clean. That's what it was.
Clean? C-L-E-M or K-L-E-M?
Mm. Yeah, I beats me. Like I said, he only introduced himself that one time. And actually, you know, now that you say it, I wonder, I bet you they did Geek Fred, because there's no way he would have used his name if he didn't know that we weren't going to ever tell it again. If I were you, I would stay away from him.
That's what everyone tells me. Isn't that what they want?
Well, we did the distraction job, and word out on the street later on was that a lot of people got geeked.
That sounds about right. Well, if you guys didn't hear that, Deandra says under her breath, that's it. Well, that's about right. Is that it?
That was some dark people. Real hard cases.
This seems like me. The piece of flimsy. Give it back to me.
What was that again?
The piece of paper. The slip of paper I gave him with the note.
Oh, yeah. He reaches into his pocket and hands it back to you. It says, well, so can I get my new yen now? Can I get out of here now?
She puts the note in her pocket, pulls out a credit 3500, and slides it over with the Lay's cigarette and says, smoke up, and rewrites the note to something different but almost illegible, and put this back in your pocket, slides it back over towards
him. He puts it in his pocket, and then he's sort of holding the cigarette, and he's looking nervous again. He says, you got a light?
The Indo reaches in her pocket again and pulls out, like, not an antique lighter, but, like, an older lighter. It's a Zippo, actually, with, like, a Celtic engraving on it. She lights up his cigarette.
He looks at it nervously, and he says, this isn't gonna frag with my head, is it? It's just gonna erase the memory, right?
At maximum, the last 12 hours.
Okay, he smokes. I think one of the effects of Lace is that you first fall unconscious, right?
After smoking a cigarette, you fall unconscious. He makes a body plus willpower test with three, against a three, and then he gets his memory erased for the past 12 minus his net hits hours.
All right, he got no net hits.
So his last 12 hours of his life, poof. And then he falls unconscious. He's unconscious for 20 times 1d6. In that time, Deandre is going to make sure he doesn't light the bed on fire with a cigarette, but he's just going to place it in an ashtray and leave another not indecipherable note, but a note that says something like, what a wild night, and has a completely a comlink number that Deandre knows will not work, with like a heart next to it, because you got to cover your details.
What's the seals and the comlink number on it?
No, that would be too mean for Deandre. She gets really close to the field, a comlink number, and then a few digits off, like off of the back, so it's hard to actually get to. And then she picks up her white noise machine and leaves.
Okay, so when you registered for the room number, though, which SIN did you use?
I used his SIN. I grabbed him and used it.
Okay, so you had him check in then?
Yes. Because Deandre knows about the details.
You, as you're leaving, you see that you had a text from Zeke on your comlink. It says, got your stuff. He drops you another pin for a stuffer shack back in Auburn.
I think she's going to round by Zeke again. She's going to send it. The message she's going to send him is perfect timing.
He meets you behind the stuffer shack. Same thing as last time, the van does a quick circle through the parking lot and pulls up. Door slides open, and the orc bodyguard jumps out and puts down the little steps so that Zeke can come out. And he's got a case in one hand, marches up to you and says, well, I got the maglock passkey and sequencer here, and I got that face kit for you. Put some feelers out on the Lace, the cigarettes. I haven't heard anything back from my usual contacts, and I sent one of the boys down to Terraslar to see if he can scare some of that stuff up for you. So that's where we're at.
Thank you. As always, you've been incredibly helpful.
That's my job.
And she transfer him the new yen for the gear, and she turn around and head out.
Just before you turn around and head out, just as you're getting ready to turn around and head out, he's started to turn away, and then he turns back around to you and he says, hey, got a quick question for you.
Sure.
Not trying to breach etiquette here or anything. I just, and I'm not trying to get information out of you, but word on the streets is that you might have been involved in a little bit of a kerfuffle up in Snohomish a night or two ago. At least somebody matching your description was.
Well, I guess you could say that was me. For the record, my employer in that situation did not tell me that he was a wanted man in Snohomish. So we got in significantly more trouble than if I had driven to Norms into Terrislar. So
he nods sort of thoughtfully and says, "Well, I got a freebie for you then. You know, us non-humans gotta stick together sometimes, so I appreciate your sticking it to those humanist polyclub braggers. That's Snohomish security personnel captain up there. She's got a real got something out for whoever was involved with that night. Sounds like there may have been a fatality in the incident that was close to her. So you might want to watch out, especially not head back up there.
If you end up in her sights, tell her that I'll face her with my blade and that she shouldn't come for me at my back."
He grins. "Well, I'm going to do my best never to end up in her sights, but figured you'd want to know."
"Thank you again. You've been a great help."
He nods, and he and his retinue depart the way they always depart. Yeah, it's probably a good time to reach back out to Cecile.
God, another call from Deandir? What is it this time?
Deandir drugged a guy and left him unconscious and almost left him your cell phone, your comlink number.
Oh.
Ultimately, she realized she was not that mean. So we're going to rewind time a little bit. We'll go back to the conclusion of the rescue of rigor mortis at the Samovar. You had mentioned to Prokop that you would like a word with him in private.
Mm-hmm.
So after after all of the goodbyes were said between the team and Ice and rigor mortis, and Ice and rigor mortis had gone away with somebody and then the rest of the team had sort of departed one by one. You were left sitting alone with Prokop in the bar, and he was drinking a coffee and looking at you rather speculatively. "So, how can I help you?"
"Prokop, I need your services as a father."
"I see. Ah, okay.
I would like to hire a runner team who recently did a job on a prison in Huyula."
"Ah, I see. Okay, so you would like to hire this team that we just did the run with. Am I understanding that correctly?"
"I wouldn't be opposed if they had outside help, but yes, you are understanding correctly. I need this to be deniable for me."
"And why not just ask them yourself?"
"As I said, I need this to be deniable for me. If I have a direct link to these people, that would be unfortunate."
"I see. You are attempting to create a space between yourself and them."
"Indeed. I require your services to diminish the good name of a certain dean of a college. Get him fired, ruin his love life, generally destroy his life wherever possible. I will, of course, be assisting the runners with forged access IDs, getting them into this prison, anything they really need. However, this would have to be through a certain level of distance."
He takes a sip from his tea and deeples his fingers. He's thinking some things through, and then, "Well, do you have information that would be useful to them? Do you know where this information is that you are attempting to find?"
"I strongly suspect that it is in the documents wing of this prison."
"I see. It seems to me, and you can take this any way you like, but it seems to me that perhaps you should do a matrix run of your own, or hire somebody to do a matrix run, and ascertain the actual location of said documents."
"That is quite likely. We do not need to move on this immediately. However, I very well may need their services anyway in order to destroy his love life."
"This is an undertaking that cannot be undone. You understand what I am saying, Cecile?"
"I can't say that I do."
"What I'm trying to say is if you have an opportunity to return to your old life now, unsullied by deeds of that nature, that now is your opportunity. But once you start traveling down this road, it will become harder and harder to return to your normal life.
Yes, I understand your concern. That is the reason I wish to have distance between myself and this operation.
I don't just mean the... How do you say? I don't just mean the legal or practical side of things, but I mean the changes that happen within you yourself. When you follow this desire for revenge and hurt somebody so deeply, these actions leave a mark.
Perhaps you aren't familiar with the corporate world, but I would like to remind you that things don't get done peacefully.
If that is the way you like it, if that is the way you want it, I am only saying some things cannot be undone.
Yes, well, I know that firsthand. I assure you I know what I am doing.
Very well. He looks momentarily, not necessarily sad, but sort of resigned.
Make a judge intentions check.
Okay.
I kind of just want a general vibe check on him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there something he's not letting me in on, so to speak?
Okay, so you get two hits. You get the sense that he is he's reluctant, mainly out of a sort of a kind of concern for you.
Mm.
And maybe a feel, you get the sense that he thinks that you're making a choice that he would prefer that you didn't make, but which he's not going to stop you from making.
Mm. So tell me, what do your services cost?
That makes him perk up a little bit more. And he takes another sip of his tea and, well, it is usually negotiable.
Mm.
My services can be either very expensive in terms of New Yen, or we can come to some other kind of arrangement.
Mm.
You are a skilled user of the Matrix. Perhaps there is there will be a time when I will need your services again.
He gives kind of a half smile and says, I don't know if I enjoy the thought of being indebted to you. No offense.
Well, to some extent, aren't you already?
I suppose you are welcome to think so, indeed.
Who put together the team that came to rescue you, Cecile?
I can only imagine it was someone with very little sense.
He chuckles. Indeed.
I am appreciative of your efforts. However, I must admit, I have already helped you set things right on your end. It would be dishonest of you to say that I have not already at least somewhat paid you back kindness.
He looks, he gives you a look of mock surprise and says, but my friend, do you not remember, recall? You were paid for those services.
I still have the money if you would like it back.
An interesting proposition.
Money means very little to me, Prokop. I care about standing. This man, he has hurt my standing and my life. I have friends who think I am dead. I may never see them again. And he didn't cover his tracks as he was supposed to.
Very well.
The world of business is cutthroat. I am...
Okay, give me another judge intentions roll as you see him smile.
Two.
He is amused by your words.
I am unwilling to owe you particularly strong service. I want, frankly, nothing to do with this life or these people. In the course of a week, I have nearly died numerous times. I want nothing to do with this. If there is a document that might fall out of my possession in the future that you happen to need, I'm amenable to that. Such things happen, but I can't buy services more than you would expect. The average wage slave would, as my companions have started to say.
Very well, then. I will take back the New Yen, and I will set up this job for you with your erstwhile compatriots.
Is that the 15,000 New Yen or the 30,000 New Yen for all of the jobs?
I will take the 15,000 New Yen.
That was out of character. I won't just to clarify for my end. But yes, I will. Who cares? It's just money.
Yeah, and I mean, 15,000 New Yen seems like a great deal if it buys you back your place at Evo's lab and your internship and...
Let me think. So, Cecile doesn't like debts. She does not like this creepy, weird, shadowy man with a weird accent wanting her to do a favor for him. And she's pretty sure if she doesn't follow through on that, he's going to fuck her life up in some way. She has 12,000 yen, which isn't a lot, but like, it's enough. Who cares? Just want to elaborate on my thought process. She does not, if she gets out, she does not want Prokop looming over her head with, I could pull you back at any moment.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Probably at this point, you know, some of the things that rigor mortis said about Prokop run through your head too.
Untrustworthy bastard, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he sort of confirmed probably a lot of Cecile's notions about Prokop and the rest of the team.
Now, you tell, without a favor, how much do your services cost?
Well, to some extent, it is dependent upon the value of the job to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it also depends somewhat on the expenditure of resources on my end.
Of course. It
depends on the relationship that I have with the person bringing the job. I have done jobs for nothing, and I have done jobs for much money.
Well, I find myself in a favorable negotiating position here, as I happen to know you have a team that already did a job at this location and therefore is already familiar with it. They've already expended resources becoming familiar with its setup, therefore it will not cost them very much. I also happen to know that this individual is someone with whom you would have a personal beef, if you'll pardon my French. So...
Yes, you bring up a good point. So, that is an interesting point.
He is related to the group who... Well, he is related to the group involving Van Housen, as I'm sure you are aware, and I doubt his views of Shadowrunners have gotten better time, so to say.
The Shadow Riders.
There also seems to be a smuggling operation out of this Warehouse Alliance prison. This may be a way he's enhancing his profits. And I'm sure you understand that someone who has such an intense hatred for Shadowrunners making more money is very bad for your business. I think this is a mutually beneficial arrangement.
He's contemplating, and then he says, well, he have given up on the idea of revenge. It leads nowhere.
Oh, but surely you can understand the value in getting rid of competition. It is entirely possible he will do something to make your life difficult in the future, even lacking revenge.
No. I think you are missing the actual leverage that you have, Cecile. But that's okay. You will understand in time. You're right.
Intentions.
Okay.
What the fuck is he talking about? Two. I really wish I would get three here, but whatever.
He has obviously, as you have been talking, he's been thinking about the situation. He's obviously come to a conclusion that, or an angle that you hadn't considered. What that could be, you don't know. But you can see that he is becoming more amenable to helping you.
Oh, hate it.
Yes, well, I do see a reason why I should help you in this endeavor, Cecile.
Well, I'm glad you've seen my side, then.
Very well. I will set up a meet with your team, and we will negotiate their fee, which you will pay, and I will take no cut. And you will not owe me.
This makes sense to me.
Is there anything else with which I can help you at this time? Is there anything that you would like to tell me about your situation?
Yes, actually, I think there are two things you could do for me also. First is, of course, I couldn't help but notice you have some lovely magical women here, who I assume have a large library of magical documents, perhaps? I, of course, don't assume that you have power to force them to let me into their libraries, but I do enjoy perusing a good library.
You are correct, of course. I would never consider attempting to force either Talia or Nadia to make their libraries available to you.
It simply seemed that perhaps they had something they wished to say to me. I do not know. Simply something to broach with them. Otherwise, please do convey to Kirsten for me that she needs to study more, and I'd be happy to help.
Ah, well, this is a way that you can do me a favor. I would greatly appreciate it if Kirsten would apply herself more to her studies.
I am sure I can get her to improve.
If you are able to get yourself reinstated at the university program, I am willing to pay you a stipend to be a tutor for Kirsten.
Oh, how generous of you. That arrangement seems perfectly fine for me, although she is by far not the best pupil I have ever had. Please do tell me what she thinks of that situation.
I will, but first you must, as I said, get yourself reinstated, which it does seem like a difficult task.
Ah, many things often do, but that is my concern.
And as for Kirsten, she is a very good student. It is the book learning which is difficult for her. She has other talents. You should consider that.
Well, it would seem. I certainly misjudged her.
You did, after all, find a way to rescue.
Right. In any case, have a pleasant evening, Prokop.
Indeed. I will be in touch as soon as I have set up the meet and negotiated a fee from your runner team.
Adieu. Then she gets up and leaves.
All right. Did she have anything else that she wanted to do?
She's probably going to go back to Dean Dare's place to pick up her stuff. That would be good. Rockop's so creepy now.
That's hilarious.
I hate it when people are like, no, actually, I think this works great. Ooh, hate it.
That was not the turn of events Cecile was looking for.
No, he knows something she doesn't, and that not a good state of affair for her.
Yeah. All right, so you're going to go grab your stuff from Deander's home.
Indeed. Cecile got a fresh change of clothes, and she's eager to get into them.
And where are you going to go to from there?
That's a good question.
Are you going to go back to the Coffin Motel?
In Redmond?
No, it was in Tacoma. What was it called again? It was called the Comfy Cubicle. If you pick up your stuff from Deander's house or home, you'll need a place to stay because you're not yet reinstated in your old life. And I'm not even going to make you roll a memory check or anything, but you do know that Alice DeVry did find you at the Comfy Cubicle. So that location is known to DeVry and Mary Luce by extension.
I mean, if Cecile isn't worried about that because she does view them as, like, ultimately allied with her, even though she views Miss DeVries with kind of a nasty eye.
She did try to mess with your head.
Yeah, no, she is polite because Miss DeVries is a colleague, and that is the extent she will be. Feels not worried about going back, but she also didn't really like that place. And I think Cecile has, like, a little bit of, like, stress going on. Where does Kirsten work?
She works at the Soybucks right across from campus.
No, but where does she work?
That's the extent of your knowledge of that.
Didn't I specify that she was a stripper?
Let's see.
If you've forgotten about that aspect and things have changed, do let me know, but...
No, I didn't forget about that aspect, but there was some, I think I edited it out because I wasn't sure how everybody in the group was going to be comfortable with that.
Good to know. I did not realize that.
Yeah, because I was going to roll with that, and then... So what I've got written in Kirsten's bio sheet is that Kirsten is an acquaintance of Cecile at the uni. Cecile does not like to be associated with her, so avoids her. Based on her perceived low social standing, in brackets stripper, She also works at a soy bucks just off campus that is popular with students and staff alike. So, I mean, canon-wise, I would say yes. At the very least, Cecile thinks that she might be a stripper.
There is something tempting about Cecile just assuming somebody is a stripper. That is very funny. Pat, do you have any problems with Kirsten being a stripper?
Not specifically.
You could say that she's... You can see why Cecile might get that impression.
You know, stays out late at night, hangs out with weird people, dresses scantily, you know.
Yep.
Those are all pretty strong indications of either being a stripper or something worse.
She's always out partying. You know she's out partying. And it's not partying necessarily. Sometimes she's partying with... You don't probably party with the people from uni, but she does sometimes. But, you know, more often than not, she's actually out somewhere else in the greater Seattle Metroplex. And so maybe that's where you've developed that sort of picture of her in your head.
I did. We'll see if Liz and Val are comfortable with it, because I do feel like having a stripper as a contact is very Shadowrun, very cyberpunk dystopia.
Oh, yeah. It totally fits. I just didn't want to make people uncomfortable.
I had planned on just having Cecile walk into Kirsten's job, but...
I don't think you know if she is a stripper. You don't know where that place is.
Of course, she would have to track it down. I'm just saying, very Cecile to just walk in and be like, hey, Kirsten, got a few questions for you. Going to the location near the university where Kirsten would work, that very dangerous.
Potentially.
Unless all the rent-a-cops are sleeping that day, which is very possible.
I guess, possibly. I guess you could have Cecile make an intuition and logic check.
Intuition plus logic? Sure. Because I as a player was just assuming that anything really related to the university would be kind of off limits until she had dealt with Dean because of the effective active APB on her.
So as you're sitting there thinking about it, it sort of dawns on you that, first of all, the media outlets have all said that you were killed in an exchange of gunfire with would-be kidnappers.
It's true.
So your sin has been listed as deceased. The other thing is, you're pretty sure that there was no official APB out on you. At this point, you think it was Dean Petroff using Alice DeVry to hunt you down.
Ah, okay.
Yes, potentially getting around on, and at this point, Alice appears to have switched allegiances. So she's probably not a direct threat, but running around on campus where Dean Petroff probably still has some pull at the moment might not be a great idea, but off campus, you're probably relatively safe.
Yeah, it's just that the coffee shop is pretty close. And also, if it's frequented by people, Cecile might run into someone who, like, actually just recognizes her, and that'll be a conversation.
Yep. That's highly likely. Highly likely.
Like, I just want to be honest with you. Not thrilled about the prospect of role-playing. Like, hey, aren't you dead? Oof. Not a fan. And if it's a coffee shop, students would be coming there, like,
it's
all
a soy
hours.
Bucks. You've been there yourself and pretended like you didn't know Kirsten when she served you, so.
Oh, absolutely.
You've been there, you've seen staff there, you know that it's frequented by lab staff, and so, yeah.
On the other hand, Cecile doesn't just want to show up at Kirsten's... Well, Kirsten probably lives at the university, now that I think about it.
She does not.
Really? Would I know this?
Yes, you do know that. You also have Kirsten's comm number.
Cecile does have Kirsten's comm number. Your mistake is thinking that she wants to use it. You know what? Better question. I would like to see if I can find any other place that Kirsten frequents.
Okay. So you're going to do a matrix search?
Yes. Shall I need to roll, or...?
Yeah, let's... It's going to take some time. Okay, so 2 hours have gone by. 3 hours. Well, at least you haven't glitched yet. All right, so 4 hours in, you feel like you've got a fairly decent picture of Cecile's sort of, thanks, Kirsten's movements around town. You've gotten into her My Feed, and you've gotten into, you know, you've looked at some of the other social networks out there, and you've done some, you've had some programs going out and sort of finding pictures of Kirsten around in social media. She's quite the social butterfly. She quite regularly visits most of the very in and happening clubs around the greater Seattle metroplex. You also see pictures of her with a very diverse group of friends, and it seems like almost every night or every other night it's a different group of friends.
Makes sense.
Very little correlation between them. And then you get a couple of strange hits from this search too. There are a couple of images that you're not quite sure are Kirsten, but some of the facial recognition algorithms that you're using tell you that there's a high probability that they are Kirsten. In one of them, there's a woman, a young woman, who is wearing the traditional dress of a geisha and is accompanied by two Japanese men. And the location is in Tacoma. And then you get another one that the facial recognition software says is very likely Kirsten. And you see what another, again, a young woman who to your eyes doesn't necessarily look like Kirsten. Very different gait. It's like a 5 second clip of this woman in a short red dress and very high heels, a matching red jacket, being escorted into a restaurant by two men who, from, you know, a quick search of their tattoos and things, you think are probably Russian mob, maybe Vori.
Mm.
So she's very, you know, all over the place.
Can I predict where she will be in approximately an hour, hour and a half game time?
That's probably a problematic since her movements around town seem to be fairly random.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's never the same. There's no rhythm to which clubs or places that she frequents. And there are also random nights where you simply don't get any hits from her.
Mm-hmm. Better question. Where is she currently?
She's at work. She's at the Soy Bucks.
When did she get off?
She will be getting off. So you just left Pro Cops. You actually were there in the morning. So she's probably going to be off around 4, which would be, call it, 5 or 6 hours from now.
She would probably be broadcasting her location as she's leaving work, unless she's going to do something illicit.
Yep, she's, I mean, you know her comm number, so you can zero right in on her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not, you know, she's not running silent or anything like that.
In that case, I'm going to just take a grid guide over to approximately that sort of area, just so I'm closer and don't have to trap her. And I'll see where she goes when she gets off work and try to, like, you know, beat her where she's going.
You're going to do a little stakeout?
A little bit. Although, not actually staking her out, just, like, seeing where she's headed and stuff. Unless I really want to be devious and try hacking a comm link. No, not right now.
All right, so you're basically staking Kirsten out for the moment. Cutting back to Deandre. Yeah, so you were going to go look for your fan club? Make sure that they weren't getting themselves into trouble.
How much trouble could fangirls get into?
A lot.
Well, when you're wearing fake elven ears and making yourself up to look like Deandre, you could get into a lot of trouble.
That's fair. You should probably go rescue them.
Where are you going to look for them? The obvious place would be Olga's.
I think she, like, so after her adventures the next day, she'd get up the crack of dawn and go and basically stake out Olga's several.
Yeah, so you go to Olga's and you get yourself a nice cup of soy calf. Do you also get any, you get one of her famous muffins?
If they have Shirshangar cheese muffins, then yes.
I think that they probably do.
Then she'd get one of those.
Yeah, very shortly after you're there, your first fan club member arrives. A tall young human male with very long blonde hair. And you see the telltale tips of the fake ears poking up through the hair, and he's made his face up to accentuate cheekbones and eyebrow and his eyes to make himself look more elven. as he walks in and orders a coffee, he looks around and he sees you, and immediately you see him, his smile brighten up. He goes and he sits down at another table, surreptitiously pretending not to look your way, and you see him get out his comlink and make a call.
I stared at him the whole time, just like directly at him.
He makes a great show of not looking at you. Before too long, more elf poser wannabes start straggling in. They're all in their late teens, early 20s, and they all sort of have the same manners, and they come in and look around, and as soon as they see you, they sort of blush and look away and go to the counter and order, and now they're all sitting at a table talking amongst each other and shooting glances over your way and talking amongst themselves.
The Ender's just going to sit there and stare at them for at least an hour.
There are eight of them at this point. Another young human male. The rest are all females, and they've sort of mimicked your dress and in some ways even accentuated it. And, you know, where your style of dress is pretty not high fashion, obviously, they've sort of taken that look and glammed it up.
They've taken Deander's, I wear a trench coat because just what. Ugh.
They've glammed it up, and they've got, you know, their trench coats are maybe a little bit finer material, maybe a little shiny, or colors change on them and things like that. Finally, one of the girls gets up and comes over to you and sort of shyly says, hi.
Deander looks directly at her and stops the timer on comlink and like visibly stops it and like does the sit down motion almost.
She smiles and sits down and says, I was just going to ask you if I could sit down with you. What's your name?
I don't think that's entirely important.
Oh, come on. You're incredibly beautiful. We just wanted to know what we should call you.
God, I'm going to roll a composure check for Deander, because I think that this is a stressful situation for her. She is dealing with more people than she's usually meant to deal with, I guess. Or not more people, just like, this is not something she wants to happen, and she wants them to stop, first of all. Four.
One thing about Deander, no matter how stressful the situation is, she's very good at keeping it together, I've noticed.
Except for when she wants to explode. Like, with the elves telling her to stop looking at her brother. And then Deander would like to judge intentions on them. Like, are they interested in Deander more than just surface level interest? Or that's Deander's real question, I guess.
You get the sense, and you've been around, you've traveled, you've met all sorts of people in your employment. As a police officer and a detective, you are sort of maybe partially embarrassed by the fact that these young humans of all things, seem genuinely interested and attracted to you in a very real sense, not necessarily romantically, but attracted to you the way that you imagine people, you know, bands of Maria Mercurial might be attracted to her, you know, just on a very deep fan-based level.
Parasocial relationship.
They've, you know, your unique appearance, your aloof mannerisms, the fact that you're an elf, all of these things has captured these young people's attention in a way that, to them at least, is very strong and real.
Do I think that Deander would choose to push them off of her or give them an easy lie that would lead them away from her almost?
If you know you've got four hits on your judge intentions, it's going to take something really monumental to break the spell. This is what happens when you run around with a charisma 6.
I think Deander literally takes like a solid minute and pauses, and eventually she gives up thinking of a way to shove up. Why not? You may call me, and she gives them the, like, spiritual sentence that means the stars reflecting on the pool at night.
The girl looks at you in wonder, and she repeats the word. You can tell that she's been practicing her spirethial. And then she says...
It's not really a word, it's more like a whole sentence.
Yep, so she sort of repeats it slowly after you and just sort of wonder and awe and gratitude that you're talking to her. And she says, do you want to come sit with us?
Not especially.
He looks a little bit crestfallen, but then she sort of nods like, yeah, that figures. Well, let us know if you ever, you know, want to hang out or do something, or if you need any help, you know.
A piece of advice. If you want something from me, don't take, and I looked up at my comm, like, 1 hour and 15 minutes to come and ask it from me.
The girl has the good grace to blush, and nod and says, yeah, that sounds good. I appreciate that. We just didn't know. We know that we can tell that you're a very private person, not sensing the irony in her words.
Ugh. And I wouldn't give Silverhand's fingers to the rest of you out of, as in, like, I don't want any of you to get in trouble. It's kind of a, I guess, backwards elf idiom, I guess.
He looks a little bit perplexed, and she seems genuinely perplexed. Trouble? I don't understand.
The idiom or what I'm implying?
I guess I don't understand either of it. Any of it.
I think D&D would then explain the phonetics of how to start at, like, breath and, like, that most idiomatic phrases being backwards from their meaning in common tongues. So, like, I wouldn't give something is more like what I wouldn't give. Or, like, I want this to happen. And then she would explain that.
The girl's hanging on every word with rapt attention.
Most elves wouldn't be so kind. There's, like, pointing visibly at her ear to the plastic ones.
He goes bright scarlet red, and he looks down and says, well, we can't help how we're born.
I guess the truth is in the leeches. But Dare points to her that his partially cut off and goes, some of us can't.
He gets up and she says, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend. And she sort of scurries off and she sits down, and then you can see them all putting their heads together around the table as she's obviously relaying the entire conversation back to the group.
I think D&D starts her phone timer again.
Hey, this time it only takes about 5 minutes, and one of the young men comes up to you and sits down unasked. He's make a judge intentions roll.
2. That is a lot of ones.
About 1. Yeah. Not a glitch, though. Close. He's nervous. He slides a napkin towards you, and on it is written a comlink number, and he says, if you ever need to get in touch with us, no offense, but if you ever need to get in touch with us, this comlink code will get you in touch with us. And then he gets up and walks away quickly.
I think the Endared leaves it on the table, and then she sits there for at least another hour or so, unless more of them are going to come up and talk to her.
It doesn't seem like it. Some of them, they sort of leave it on intervals, and then others come in and look at you and sit down. And all told, by the end of a couple of hours of sitting there, you've counted probably about 15 people, all of them humans, about 75% female, 25% male. All of them in some way or form imitating your appearance, dress, and mannerisms.
Nightmare.
It's awesome. I mean, you know, they're the overt and easily understandable ways to be the evil GM, and then they're the ones that are just really... These kids probably don't even realize. But in fairness, Dinder is has a very unique appearance. And if these kids are already predisposed to be fan clubby over elves and elven culture and all that kind of stuff, learning of and meeting, you know, becoming aware of a particular elf who was so unique, it would probably trigger that kind of thing.
Especially when they give you a name like the Stars Dingoff.
They're probably convinced that you're a celebrity.
Little do they know, D&D is just an old woman.
An old detective.
An old detective slowly becoming an anarchist.
So you don't hear anything back from Zeke that day. And at some point, so Cecile, did you go pick up your stuff from D&D's?
Yeah, presumably.
Okay, so at some point, Cecile stops by.
I think...
I didn't say Cecile was stopping by when Deandre was there.
If it's, like, immediately after... What is it? From the meet... From the... Deandre has, like, gotten her corkboards out and is, like... They are mounted on the wall in the living room of her flat, and she is full conspiracy cork mode.
Yeah, so I guess the question, Cecile, is did you call ahead to see if Deandre was there? Did you just go knock on the door?
See, if the door is locked, locked, presumably Cecile would, like, get in somehow, either by hacking her home network or just trying to scam her way into a key for the door.
All right, so when you try to... The home network... Well, she doesn't really have a home network.
Really? I mean,
this is Deandre.
Oh. Yeah, I have to imagine it comes with a home network by default. Like, what, did she unplug the router?
Maybe a toaster, you know, and a refrigerator or something like that are on the network.
Deandre's definitely put a deadbolt on her door.
Oh, my God.
There's probably, even though she might have a home network, it's not ever been set up or connected and configured in a way that would make sense to somebody like Cecile.
Well, all Cecile cares about right now is whether or not she can open the door with it.
It doesn't look like it. There's actually a physical lock on the door.
Ugh, disgusting. In that case, Cecile will begrudgingly message Deandre, like, hey, I need to get my stuff from your house. Let me in.
I think it, like, takes a second of you standing up, but then you hear Deandre loudly stare and start basically throwing stuff around. And after, like, 5 minutes, she opens the door and the couch is covered in a big sheet. And there's something which looks heavily like a bunch of cork boards, like antique, basically. I mean, I don't want to imply that Deandre's apartment plan.
Does something hidden under a bed sheet count as a secret?
Sure does.
So I need to roll a composure test, huh?
I think a composure test is probably in order at this point.
Nope. She goes right for it. Are you going to stop her from looking at what's under this?
She's going to get a hot second to peek at the corkboards before Deandre's going to pick her up again.
She better not.
Sounds like she said she's going to.
So yeah, Cecile will basically, with her left hand, just pick it up and throw it off, you know, in all of her two agility glory.
Yeah, Cecile sees that there's something that's been covered, and obviously there's an attempt made to obscure something, and she tries, but she just can't quite help herself, and she just walks over and grabs the sheet and flings it off.
What do I see?
It's three large corkboards, which are, for Cecile's sake, large wooden monstrous boards with a softer wood side, with all of these thumbtacks with little pictures and printouts and written notes, with big red and, like, a bunch of, like, yarn of different colors, basically, like, running from pin to pin with notes. A lot of them say dead end next to them, or some of them say dead, underlined. And then at the center is a picture of an elf man who, if you were to look at his facial structure, resembles Deandre quite a lot, but is a normal elf phenotype rather than being a druid or a dryad.
Cecile scrunches up her face and asks, why are you making a crafts project out of a data visualization tool?
Deandre walks over. Wait, this is the composure check moment for Deandre too.
5. Good.
I guess Deandre is very calm-headed.
After dealing with the other people.
Deandre, like, breathes in, breathes back out, and says, I'm old, and runs over and covers it back up with a sheet.
Uh-huh. And what are you data visualizing here?
Deandre is going to stand there and stare, like, holes through Cecile. And she's going to judge intentions. She rolled a 1, so Deandre is going to say nothing.
Paul, what does a 1 mean?
You can sort of describe it yourself in most superficial terms.
It's pretty obvious that she doesn't really care about what's on it, but wanted to see what was under the sheet. However, you get like the faintest hint that she does want to know more. You're old? That is a strange statement to make in isolation.
Jundir takes a long breath out and basically like does the mental calculus of what is it worth it to tell this woman to go. This process is easier for me to use than your data visualization.
Zeal looks at the pile and looks back up at you with like, a what?
I was born in 2011.
Zeal's face is like, what?
Yes, I am 62 years old from 6 months ago.
Hmm.
And sometimes simply easier for me to dig up my old cork boards, put pictures on them, and run yarn across them to organize all the information.
Huh.
And I imagine for you it'd be much simpler to use this data visualization, but for me it stimulates my thought process, lets me think about something other than the emotions involved in the case. Simply the connections between information.
You know, you can do like all of this but cheaper with AROs. Like, it won't cost you anything. You are very weird. No, I have to ask more. So, what is on these boards? Why have you covered them in string?
Dinder is going to reach under the... she's going to reach under them and pull off central picture.
Ah, I see now. You're, this is some kind of mystery, isn't it?
You could say that.
Oh, I see.
The specific term for it, a missing persons turned into a possible murder. Or a possible homicide.
Oh, classic.
Well, I wish it wasn't classic.
How long have they been missing?
5 months, 28 days, 33 minutes, 4 seconds.
That is an uncomfortably specific answer. I assume you are related to this victim. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, it looks like you've gone down a lot of leads here.
And every one of them comes up dead. Whoever did this wants it buried and deep.
Hmm. Yeah, most people that commit kidnappings and or murder do. Most of the time they aren't very good at it, though.
Yeah, if only that was the case.
Tell you what, I have some stuff to do, but this is interesting. I'll probably come back here.
Well.
Actually, hold on. Paul.
Yep?
So, I failed my composure test. But that was to see what was under it. Do I now have to make a separate composure test to see whether or not I have to drop what I'm doing to actually start working on this case? I can look it up. Okay, you must succeed in a charisma plus willpower 3 test to avoid pursuing secrets or knowledge that few people know about when you receive hints of its existence.
Hmm. Yeah, and maybe it's jumped quite high to the top of your list.
Yeah, that it has.
Like, this is a genuine mystery.
Like, it's just in the flesh.
You've written this novel before?
She was working on it. She didn't finish. You know, grad school. Yeah, no, I do think this has jumped to the top of her priority list now. Why don't you tell me more?
That sucks. But I think Deandre would uncover the corkboard and then put them up on the wall again. And kind of run through all the dead ends she's been through, like corporate inquests and sneaking around, and she hasn't bought pay data or anything yet, but like...
So, do you know from whence your brother was taken?
From whence? The last known contact with some of his, let's call them previous acquaintances, is a message he sent to me while I was driving into Seattle from, say, the Sheet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But where was he?
I don't know.
So you don't know where he was. You don't know who's taken him. It's been several months.
Yes.
And you've talked to everyone you can think to talk to, and they haven't given you anything.
Well, recently I spoke to, and I... Ginger moves to another one of the crook goes and points to a picture of Buzz, like a really small one, like a mugshot. It's a very small picture of Buzz, and he's collapsed and unconscious. This man told me that he went on a run with him, a shadow run, where he met Rian and one Lieutenant Keith Clean. D&D probably would have extracted an exact time and date from.
It was about from Buzz.
Sorry. Yes, from Buzz.
Yeah, so I mean, Buzz's recollection wasn't that great. I mean, it had been quite a while ago. So I'm going to say it was about a year and a half ago.
A year and a half ago, this clean, and I was about to, I guess, put feelers out for information on him. They were doing something, a run. Sorry.
Yeah, they had basically hired Buzz and his chummer, Fred, to act as a distraction. And Buzz had described these people that had hired him as an MCT, Black Ops squad, and felt that they were very dangerous people and that they might have geeked Fred, and that's why he himself had gone into hiding.
Dinder's written like a short version of those notes next to the picture, and there's a single pen, and it goes off to a question mark with the name Lieutenant Clean written under it.
And do you know anything about this lieutenant?
Nope.
Aside from the fact that Buzz says that he thought they were MCT.
Why would he think they were MCT?
And that sort of jibes with Deander's recollection of she did think that Rian had worked for MCT.
Rian was a mage, wage mage for MCT.
So there's that sort of correlation.
He worked for Mitsuhama and he was doing shadow running, huh?
I guess.
Well, I think the only course of action left is to find this lieutenant and find out what that run was about.
Well, that was my plan, though I feel like I should wait and let everything calm down from... A few waged keebs came and tried to talk me out of looking for it.
Did you get a picture?
Of the keebs?
Yeah.
No.
Dean
Dare flips to a page in her notebook from memory their faces.
Well, I can't do much with the drawing, unfortunately.
We were in a bar, so they might be on security footage. You can get access to that.
Depending, that'll be very easy or very annoying.
That was DeCleary's bar.
DeCleary's?
Okay. So, I'm trying to think here, because now I kind of want to get to the bottom of this, too. I think Cecile does. But Cecile did have plans.
Cecile is now torn between helping Deandre with her suicide mission, doing her own stuff.
As I do want to say, Cecile does still loathe Deandre.
Although this has now made her a little bit more interesting.
Interesting, yes, but a total bitch.
Who uses paper and flimsy and printed out pictures to map out data on a wall, of all things.
That has to be so... Is that real, like... thread or yarn? What is that made of? Natural fiber?
It's probably actual thread.
Where did you even find that? Did you go to a tailor? You are so weird.
All right, so we're going to call it... I'm going to call it because I'm still suffering from jet lag from last night's game. It's New Year's Eve tonight, right?
It's tomorrow night. It's the 30th, and it's not yet the 31st. Oh, you mean
for me? It's the 31st.
Yeah, it's like 10 minutes into the 31st, 12 minutes.
All right. Well, I think this leaves us with a lot of interesting things that we can.
That took an interesting turn.
Wait until Cecile learns that Deander has.
Has what?
That cut strategically just at the right time. Just wait until Cecile finds out that Deander has blank.
I was like, what?
Well, I'm not going to say anything then.
Cecile's head explodes.
Secrets.
Have a good night, guys.
You too.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast to use such names, logos, artwork, marks, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast in any official capacity whatsoever.
The music for the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast was written and performed by Trace Mineral. The Hard Knock Sorority Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons License 4.0, meaning you are welcome to use the material as long as you give us credit.